One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, speaker, and psychologist. Every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature. And we've been having a great time at the LA Book Festival here in USC, Los Angeles, California, with great guests and fans and readers. And today we have a really interesting guest who is Rebecca Forrester. She is a prolific US Today best-selling author of legal thrillers and other books. She's a world traveler. She's traveled to 110 cities and 21 countries. She's a mom also, and she has an MBA, a former account supervisor at an ad agency, volunteer at local hospital and young writers conferences. She's a popular guest speaker nationwide, and she's been married 38 years to a Superior Court judge who helps her doing research for her legal thrillers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So I don't know what's more fascinating, that you have a husband who's a Superior Court judge that does your legal thrillers, or that you've been traveling to 21 countries?
You know, it's hard to tell, because I actually get a lot of inspiration from what he does, which is nice, because I didn't have to go to law school. So it's sort of like an in-house research department. But the traveling, both of us adore traveling, and we like to go to unusual places. The most unusual was Albania.
Oh, wow.
Yes, where we lived for, I think it was about 8 weeks on and off. And that also is so inspirational. So I think being a writer is, as you well know, you take energy from all the different things you do.
Yes,
so it's
definitely
not just the marriage and the husband, but where we go to as a couple.
And I learned, as we were talking earlier, that we're both Geminis.
Yes, right? We are.
We're both creative, kind of spontaneous people.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I wrote a book called Shyness, The Gift of Shyness, so we're both kind of shy. Although I'm a little more introverted, I think you said you're extroverted. So you,
I am.
You actually get energy from people, and you even write at coffee stores, but you say that you like to get the energy when you do that.
I do, and I find it so interesting, because you don't necessarily have to talk to people to get that energy, but just seeing them sort of in your line of sight or hearing their conversations, I find I really keep that writing energy up, because I'm hearing new voices for characters, things like that.
Ah, okay. So you're doing like undercover research. Or you're a little bit of a spy, let's say.
Oh, yeah.
Mentally.
Please don't tell anybody at Coffee Cartel that.
You change the names, right, to protect the innocent.
To protect the innocent. But it's more like that subconscious. Do you...
Yes.
You know that feeling
of
subconsciously something is growing in your brain?
Yes,
and
definitely.
It comes out through your creativity?
That's really interesting. Yeah, definitely. We talk about the unconscious and the subconscious in Freudian psychology, the id, ego, superego. So the id is like the childlike part of this, spontaneous. The superego is like the parent or the parent-wise, and then the ego is the adult.
Oh,
so
okay.
All the different aspects of your personality that you absorb.
You know, as you're talking, I can kind of see how that's relevant to the way my day is spent in working, because I have to be spontaneous in terms of the writing, otherwise the drama isn't there and the emotion.
Yes.
But then I have to go back and I have to make sure that I realize that now the business part, make that book just as good as it can be. So that's my adult. That's very interesting.
Yeah, so you're a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah.
You're a Gemini in three ways, right?
See, who knew? My gosh, thank you for telling me exactly
no
what I've been doing.
Now, Rebecca, in your novels, I believe you talk legal thrillers. Do you deal with crime and people that do crimes, or what is that your thrillers
about? I do deal with crime, and I deal with the legal system, but mine are a little strange, because they are inspired by things in the legal system.
Yes.
I have this fascination with one human being against a, you know, systemic society.
Yes.
And I have a lot of relationships in my book. So, for instance, there's one book, Silent Witness, that was inspired by father's rights.
Oh.
And what happened was, there were a couple of divorces in my own immediate family.
Right.
And I realized that everyone immediately went to the lady's side of the story.
Yes.
And come to find out later, there was another side of the story.
Ah.
And so that inspired this book to talk about, you know, whose love is more important? Is it the father or is it the mother?
Ah.
So
you think it's equal in a sense?
Different, very different. But yes. I do think there was, you know, a sort of a championship feeling on my part of, I wanted men to know that I find them equally reliable with their children, but it always is based on a court case or a murder, you know. Well, so I really do know that the reader wants that kind of drama.
Right. There's some jurisdictions where they're actually having new laws to give more custody to the fathers when the boys especially turn like 13 or 14.
Yes.
Because that's when they really need a lot of the dad role models. And they actually show that divorce affects boys a lot more in terms of aggression and behavior.
Really?
When they're, you know, don't have the dad involved.
Sure, sure.
So, I mean, some of those things are changing a little bit.
And I'm happy to hear that. And obviously, with what you do and your insights, yes. You know, you've probably known that for a very long time.
Right.
And for me, it was more an exploration of that within the context
yes.
of a thriller.
Definitely. Now, in terms of crime, I mean, people are kind of fascinated. You know, I work in forensic psychology as well. So people often
cool.
are interested in CSI and, you know, the criminal side of the, you know, criminal mindset.
Yep.
And, you know, you often think, is it genetic or environmental? We know that there are, you know, identical twin studies where they're reared apart. And
yes.
And they still have criminal tendencies. And then there's also things like modeling behavior or basically reinforcement. You get away with something when you're younger and you keep doing it and until you're caught. So what do you think, genetic or environmental or a combination of both?
You know, I think it's a combination of both, but I do think that genetics maybe has a little leg up there. I really do. And I have nothing to base this on. I'm not a psychologist. But however, when you write fiction, you are an observer.
Yes.
And I do a lot of court watching, and I read a lot of the legal newspapers, and
right.
and I'm constantly researching. And I know what you're saying, because
yes.
there is always the discussion of this, you know, from journalists.
Yes.
Hard to tell, but I just think, I truly do believe there are some people who are simply mm-hmm. born mm-hmm. evil.
Right. You're talking about the sociopathic, antisocial personalities.
Yes.
Where at a young age, you know, they're setting fires and mutilating
exactly.
animals.
Exactly.
So that might be a
predisposition. But their family, if they aren't hardcore, you
yes.
know, that family can, I don't know if it changes it or dampens it. I have no idea.
It's possible, yeah. I mean, it could be a bilateral effect. You know, the genetics can bring up the environment or vice versa.
Okay. Okay.
Now, the key is, though, in terms of society, are there any cases that you've seen that you've written about?
See, actually,
yes.
In a
disguised way.
The first book of the Witness series, which is the most popular series, was really inspired by a case my husband had toward the end of his career as a criminal judge.
Mm-hmm.
He's now civil. He had a case where he had to sentence a 16-year-old to prison for a triple murder.
Wow.
And it really, usually he's incredibly, you know, even keeled. And
yes.
even he said, that was really tough because he knew that life sentence was going to be a death sentence,
yes.
you know, of a 16-year-old
yeah.
in adult prison.
It was a triple murder.
Right. And at this time, when I was writing this book, there weren't that many chronologically young children who were tried as adults. So
oh, really?
This was, yeah, this was quite some time ago. And it struck me as, how do I feel about this? I really didn't know. Okay, they have done these horrendous things, but they still are children. And I think that's where your nature versus nurture comes in.
Okay.
And I wrote the book, and I still don't know how I feel about it. And
I see. Let me ask you, so he was convicted, he did do the...
He was convicted,
he
did go to...
He's still in prison.
I don't know what happened to him.
You don't know what happened,
don't
okay.
know what happened to him.
So he was guilty then.
I
thought you think he's like innocent. You know, like usually the thrillers, they try to get the guy off. Cause
exactly.
He's usually.
Yeah.
But in this case, he was guilty.
Well, he was. He walked up to a car with three people, and it was a gang jump. So.
Oh, I see. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
and that stuff. But that's the other thing.
Right.
Sometimes people get a little upset with me because I don't really do the happy ending thing.
Oh, really?
I think in terms of when you're talking about the law, I don't think there are any real clear-cut winners.
Right.
Somebody always loses.
Right.
Even if it's just a divorce case. You know,
right,
they
right.
might lose their children. Uh-huh. So mine tend to end on a note of, we did the best we could. The law is the law. Justice is a different thing.
I see. Now, people are fascinated by the so-called shadow side, you know, the dark side of mentality. What do you think that is? Why are people so fascinated by that kind of thing?
You know what? I've thought about this a lot because I am the same way, and I always have been
yes.
in my reading and, you know, my writing. And I think it's because, if this is going to sound, maybe sound a little silly,
okay.
but I wonder if it isn't because it's a talisman. It won't happen to me if I know the worst. It's a strange feeling. And I am the most uncourageous person you are ever going to
wow.
meet.
Okay. So I work with victims of crime, but you've never been a victim of a crime, as far as
I
you know.
Just what I consider very small. Yeah, I was mugged in Chicago on the L.
So stop,
but
yes.
it was not, I mean, when you look at the grand scope
right.
of what can happen
you
to people.
You weren't stabbed or anything like that?
No, okay. no. I just down a flight of stairs
grabbed
and
it.
That kind of thing.
I
yeah.
see. Oh, okay.
So.
I see.
But it was enough to make me realize, oh my gosh, I am defenseless. I really am in this dark place, this dark night. I was working in a bar at 2 a.m. and had to get home, and that was the only way to do it. So yeah, it was scary. And the other thing I did do is I did a ride along, and they give you instructions on what to do when the policeman has to stop. And I stood behind him. I was supposed to stand behind his door, and I stood behind him as I watched an absolutely huge, crazy person come at him.
Wow.
And that was enough for me to realize that I am so grateful for the police. Mm. I am so grateful for people who are that courageous.
Right.
And there is no way to tell when crime's going to come at you. No way at all.
Right, right.
And so...
So I guess we're all Walter Mitty's that we kind of like read the book and we get kind of caught up in it, right?
Like, we do. Yeah,
we're like heroes in our own mind.
And readers will write and say, you know, I don't think I would have done that. And and I always like to write back and say, what would you do? You know, and people have this idea of how they would react.
Right.
But I think that is a little bit of wishful thinking on human beings' part.
Not really.
Yeah. And even if you're trained, and I always see these, you know, self-defense classes and things. Even if you're trained, I must say in that moment in Chicago, I was totally frozen, completely frozen.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, I've done some martial arts. I mean, there's an automatic mechanism if you're expert at it.
That
you don't even think about it. You kick in.
Okay.
It's like a survival mechanism.
But don't you think you have to reach that level first?
Yes, definitely. Because fear is the key that really hurts you.
Yes.
So if you start to fear, then you know your amygdala, brain chemistry, will create cortisol, which is actually, you're too excited, right? You're too, you know, so you can't really function. So.
And would that have caused that frozen? I mean, I couldn't even scream. It just.
Exactly. Yeah, so you're too caught up in the fear mechanism. But, you know, if you're able to breathe and kind of calm yourself a little bit, you know, and take action.
Right.
You know, that would be something to work on.
And but it happens so fast.
Yes, that's the thing. It's very fast.
So if you're expert, that's almost like a muscle memory you have.
Yes, automatic reaction. Like, you don't even know what you're doing, but you're doing it.
Right. There is no way that would have happened. And I actually.
Well, we wanted to get you into martial arts.
I did.
We wanted to get you started. Our first lesson is Monday.
I can do that. I actually just was accepted into a gun safety course with our local police, which is very exciting, because I do a lot of research things.
Oh,
for instance, I was on the Leaders to See, where I went on the USS Nimitz for 2 days, DEA Citizens College. So I do a lot of this.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Like, you can get it anywhere you want, because you're saying I'm a novelist. Right?
It is fun. But the thing is, has that made me more courageous? No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Not yet.
So, you know what? Maybe I do need that martial arts.
There you go. Now, in terms of positive elements, you know, Love University is a show that we basically want to encourage people with hope, optimism, gratitude, you know, all the positive elements of what I call Love IQ, which is love intelligence.
That's cool.
It's kind of a spiritual form of intelligence.
Okay.
You know, things like patience and compassion. So our idea is to help people elevate their levels. So when you write these books, is there any positive elements? Let's say things that Love University would also understand.
Absolutely. The Witness series, which is the most popular, is really based on a blended family, an odd blended family of 3 or 4 people who feel quite the misfits, you know, and they find each other, and their level of loyalty to one another is what I hear most often from fans. And I think that only comes because I write about what I know, and I have to say I have a very, very close-knit family, and actually my husband and I have been married almost 43 years.
Now that by itself is a mystery, right? Now, how do you pull it off, you know, being two different people?
We are, and I think, we don't work in the same business. I think it's really good. But it's complementary to one another.
Right.
B, we both think each other's hilarious.
Okay.
I don't know why, and I know you know that humor counts
a lot. Is he a Gemini too, or no?
No, he's Aquarius.
Oh, Aquarius, okay.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be loving in some ways.
Yeah, but very quiet, though.
Okay.
Very, you know, one foot in front of the
other.
He's
going kind of thing.
Yes, yes. And you know what, too, is I think we're both incredibly curious, and I think sometimes that's lacking in relationships where you think every day is supposed to be relationship day.
Yes.
But we're both curious about the world. And so we bring that home, and he'll learn things that I didn't know, and I'll learn things he doesn't know.
So you're very inquisitive toward each other, too.
We are.
You're rediscovering, you know, each other.
Every day.
As the day goes on. So you don't get bored.
No.
Because for Geminis, and for a lot of people, boredom is the destruction of relationships.
That's very true.
Because you're kind of used to it. You know, it's nothing new.
No, but this is because I admire so much what he does for a living, but I also admire... he is a nonfiction reader, history. I am a complete fiction reader, but he always will find things, oh, this would be good in a book, or this might be good. Don't ask him for titles. He's horrible at that.
Okay. Right.
But I do think it's so important, if you're, especially if you're trying something new,
right,
to have at least one person who so believes in you and so wants you to succeed.
Ah, okay.
And
so
that,
like your muse, shall we say.
Yes. Well, yeah, but it's that, because I've seen some friends who their spouse or their significant other, it's like, it's fine until they succeed more than their spouse succeeds.
So jealousy and envy can come into play.
Kind of comes into it, don't you think?
Especially with entertainers and celebrities who marry each other, you know, sometimes.
Very tough.
Or high-powered people that marry, you know, like business executives sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. When there's that kind of power, and I think what's nice is he leaves his work really at work.
That's good.
And
but you don't, right? You probably always work.
I'm always working. I'm always kind of poking him to say, what'd you do today? But no, mine is different, and I think he kind of gets a charge out of seeing the process.
Definitely.
Even if he doesn't read fiction, he loves understanding the process of how it works.
Yeah, so it sounds like a very complimentary relationship.
We are.
I think you said you're a shy extrovert, which means it takes you a while to get comfortable, and then you're definitely sociable.
Yes.
And he sounds like more an introvert. Is he internal energy, would you say?
He is very internal. And,
and so it's a little balance, right?
Right. And so, you know, while I, when I get very excitable, he is...
Calm you down. He's a calming presence.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And you get him out of his shell and take him out on the town a little bit sometimes.
How did you know that? You're absolutely right. Oh, my gosh. We were just talking about that the other day. I told him, I said, you'd have no friends unless I brought someone home. And he goes, you're right. Yeah, but I really love the ones you bring home.
There you go. So far, as long as it's not a stray dog, you're okay, right?
Oh, no. The dogs are not in the picture at the moment.
Oh, okay. Exactly. Compatibility is very important, but also accepting each other's style. You know, I wrote the book Love Types, which is a bestseller for many years, on personality compatibility.
Yes.
And, you know, the introvert and extrovert can have issues if they don't respect each other.
Yes.
Especially the female extrovert and the male introvert, because she can be very strong-minded, he can be kind of go with the flow.
That is true.
And she may lose respect for him and vice versa.
Yes.
But if they do respect each other, they can complement each other.
And do you find that is unusual to find? Because I always think we're a bit unusual in that we've gotten along so well for so many years.
Yes. Well, you worked at it. I'm sure in the beginning it may have been a little bit of a struggle.
Oh, yeah. Only on my part because I was a nutcase. But
well,
so the poor guy was wonderful.
Right. Because you probably have a lot of high energy.
Yes.
You know, in terms of certain things.
And I think that was a shock to his system.
So overcome a little bit, yeah. So you maybe mellow a little bit down, and he can...
Actually,
you know,
a lot. A lot over the years. And I can almost tell you when. It was around age 30 to 35, which was kind of interesting that I can look back and see that was sort of a hill I climbed, and then it was like, oh, I get it now. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Now, Rebecca, this is really a great interview we're having. I really enjoy having you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I'm really thinking, you know, for writers, because we're in the book festival here, which is really great. A lot of people are readers, but also they're writers.
Yes.
And a lot of people actually want to be writers, but they're afraid. You know, they have 9-to-5 jobs, they have families, and they say, how do I really do it? How do I make a living? What's your advice to writers? How can they become actual full-time professional writers if they want to do that?
You know what? I started because someone dared me to write a book. Mm-hmm. And so I started because it was a joyous kind of thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think if would-be writers don't look at it in terms of how much money I can make. They have a story, it's burning. Even if you did 100 mm-hmm. words a day, mm-hmm. even if you did that, you would eventually have a wonderful book at the end of the year.
Right.
When I started, I was working corporately. Mm-hmm. I had a little toddler, and I had an old typewriter, and I would put my son behind me while I wrote, put a piece of paper in his typewriter. Mm. He wrote his book.
Wow.
I wrote my book.
That's amazing.
So I think having fun with it in the beginning and also educating yourself. There's so much opportunity these days. Independent writing, traditional publishing.
Right.
There's so many ways that you can help, and that you can start your career. One of the ways I also did it early on was I would volunteer for charities, philanthropic groups, and write for them.
Oh, wow.
So I would get a portfolio, you know, and I would get used to the writing process. But I just, you know, don't look so far in advance that you think, I want to quit my job.
Yes.
Look to the moment and say, today I'm going to do 100 words,
tomorrow
I'm going to do 500.
Exactly.
And it gets to be a wonderful self-competition.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like a small step to the big results.
Absolutely.
You know, like you work out 20 minutes a day and then make 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Now, I know you're very prolific. You've written over 30 books.
I have.
So you said you start in the morning, you write, you know, straight.
I do now.
Were you an energy? Yes. But you were a night owl at one time.
I was, because I was working a corporate job.
Ah,
so
okay.
What I did was I would come home from a corporate job, and before I had my first little one, I would literally go in the back room with the typewriter, and I wouldn't come out until I had a certain number of pages.
Ah, okay.
And then I would go back to work the next day.
I see.
And that was very, you know, good to do, but I understand that if you have children, especially if you have children now,
yes.
The children element did change things a bit. But nobody I know ever became a writer instantly.
Yes.
And I think the older you are, the more experience you have, the more
yes.
you understand relationships, because books really aren't about the trial.
Yes.
They're about the people in the books.
Ah, okay. The character, you have to really believe in them
and
identify with them.
Root for them. You
yes.
you want
yes.
to and you want to
yes.
even root for the villain. Like, you know, how villainous can you be?
Right, exactly. So you kind of become the character a little bit, right, mentally.
Oh, definitely.
You know, like you identify.
I am totally in the zone when it's working.
Wow.
Yeah, with those characters.
That's
absolutely.
Powerful. So it sounds like a very powerful flow, and there's an area of psychology called flow you may have heard about.
Okay.
Where, you know, like you get the runner's high, where you lose
yes.
track of time.
Oh, yes.
And you kind of become one with the experience, and that actually is one of the keys of happiness. People who reach a high level of success is that they basically are in the flow of what they're doing.
When I am not thinking about it, when I feel I'm in that scene, totally in that scene that I don't even know I'm sitting somewhere, then it is the best feeling in the world. It's
a
natural
feeling.
High.
So if that's something that comes from you, some people is music
yeah.
or meditation
yep.
or exercise or
right.
you know, being with a loved one.
Sure.
But for you, is writing. And for, you know, I feel the same
yeah.
way too. So that's a great passion, right?
It is.
It's something that comes from you.
And it didn't start that way because I didn't believe I should be a writer. I mean, I thought...
Right, so you could second guess yourself.
I thought it was a fluke,
okay.
you know, the first book. The first five books
yes.
I thought were flukes.
Right.
And when I realized, no, it's okay to accept that.
Right.
And the passion really built.
Yes.
And so it didn't begin that way. Where a lot of new writers, it does begin
yes.
that way.
Right.
And I think for me, it was a good thing that it built up.
Okay.
Because
right.
I would have been devastated early on if it hadn't.
Right. So, yeah, so you took this baby steps and then eventually
yeah.
felt the reward from what you're doing.
Exactly.
And then you have more motivation to continue.
Exactly. And
exactly.
then it became, all of it became more interesting. Not
wow.
just the writing, but learning about publishing,
mm-hmm.
learning, meeting other writers, learning mm-hmm. about places mm-hmm. I could get help, you know.
Right. Can writers make a good amount of money? Let's say they want to be successful. What's a good amount of money for them to make?
You know what? I think I'm going to pass on that question. Let mm-hmm. me put it this way. Writers can definitely make a good living.
Okay.
And I do know some lady writers who I've known for a long time. Their husbands have quit their jobs.
Wow.
Yes,
okay.
to work for them, which is very exciting. Now, having said that,
yes.
the caveat is that you have to, these days, if you're an independent writer,
yes.
you honestly have to learn the marketing.
Promotions and all
promotions.
That.
Okay. You have to be right there on social media,
right.
you exactly. know, those kinds of things.
Right.
So it is not, mm-hmm. it is a job. And
yes.
no one should,
yeah.
you know, kid themselves
so
about
some YouTube
that.
People, you know, they have millions of hits. And some people, you know, whatever, they get very successful.
Yeah.
And others may not as much.
And sometimes so. You don't need millions of hits. If you're
yes.
writing a very narrow market, so
yes.
say you're writing some kind of historical fiction that appeals to a few people, you
yes.
can still make a great living because you're going to find those passionate
That's
people.
A good point. And they're
yes.
very dedicated fans.
They are.
Who read everything you write.
They are.
Because they see your name immediately, right?
And they think, you know, oh, I'm going to, yeah, they think legal thriller for me,
right.
but they
John
might.
John Grisham, like a forester.
Right. Or, and if you're a historical author, they'll say, yeah. I love that period in
remember
history.
Remember John Jakes? You ever read him?
I do remember
yeah,
John
yeah,
Jakes.
He's a historical, yeah, I used to
yeah,
like him.
Yeah,
yeah
he
like,
was really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, very good, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think there's a market for everyone,
right.
but you can't get disappointed and down on yourself.
Right.
Writing is like any other thing, is that you practice it, you learn,
right.
and you get better.
Exactly. Now, one more thing, Rebecca, you talk about volunteering now.
Yeah.
One of the things we talk about here at Love University is giving love without expectation.
Absolutely.
Out into the world, you know, and then it may come back to you in ways you don't understand.
Right.
Now, you volunteer at hospitals, you volunteer with young writers. Tell us about that. Why does that give you a sense of love?
Well, the hospital was kind of strange because I actually had been very sick in 2011-12, so I was in the hospital a lot, and I had some difficulties with the hospital. Luckily, came out alive. That's good. And when I wrote to them about this, you know, things needed to change, they wrote back and said, well, would you like to be on the patient advisory committee? Which
wow.
I thought was very smart of their part. So
you were healed, right?
I was
yeah.
healed, and
yes.
I was raised. It's like, yeah, yes. things have to change, and they were giving me an opportunity
oh.
to do so. So that nobody else would go through, you know, the mistakes that happen.
Yes.
And now I've been doing that, oh gosh, a long time. So 9 years,
wow.
8 or 9
wow.
years. And what I do for them is I attend meetings with their different departments.
Yes.
They ask, what would a patient think about this procedure or that
yes.
procedure? I write some of their patient instructions. And honestly, I feel wonderful because I know a couple of things specifically have changed that were directly related to me. And I know that no patient will lie in that bed and think, who do I call? And that's very exciting to me to be
yes.
that involved, you know. And as far as the kids, I mean, unfortunately, we've seen a lot of these creative programs go by the wayside in our schools.
Mm.
And when you go in to these children's conferences in middle school, it is incredible how creative they are and how much they want to share their creativity. But the parents are often worried about saying, oh, I'm saying he's good because he's my kid.
Yes.
Whereas you go in and that energy that flows back to me is just invaluable. And hopefully my energy flows to them and
yes.
they are more confident in their writing.
That's beautiful. So yeah, giving love and without expectation, that's the key.
You know,
and in
right.
a sense, you know, you say you were ill,
yep.
but then for some reason that turned around into you being on their board.
Into a positive,
right?
Yes.
So because you're open to the opportunity.
And I didn't realize that. That's an interesting way of putting it. I
yes.
thought I was just like, you know, mm-hmm. pent up energy. I had to release it. But
yes.
you're right. I
yes.
think I was open to the opportunity.
Yeah, and that's, they've done studies on luck. They found people who are lucky in life often are open to opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So they can be waiting in line somewhere and they talk to someone. That person gives them great advice or becomes a partner or friend that they wouldn't normally have met.
You know, that's a wonderful point because I would not be a writer today had not somebody just jokingly said, mm-hmm. you know, why don't you write a book? And
yes.
that window kind of opened, and I'll never know why I stepped through.
Yeah, and you just stepped through, right? And I'm glad because if not, you would not be here today and Love University, right? I would not have met you.
I wouldn't. And
you would have met your publicist, your maybe even your husband you wouldn't have met. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm going to tell him. I have to tell him that. Did you?
I don't know if you met him that way.
But no, we met in high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we didn't like each other for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so you had to come back to him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Nine years we were, you know, doing our own thing. And it was very funny.
Oftentimes when you do something you love, you also attract love as well. Like, ironically, like you attract romantic love when you do what you is your passion.
Well, you make such a good point because I'm not thinking of romantic love, but I am thinking of this wonderful sense of well-being
yes.
that spread through the whole family.
Yes.
You know, my kids felt, oh, you know, mom's really calm, this is good. And they both are in creative careers, and it is a complete acceptance between the traditional career and the creative career, and there is that sense of true well-being, and I think
yes.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, calmness and peace, you know,
yeah.
and love.
And it's and that's what love is. I
yes.
mean, personally, I'm glad I'm not on a roller coaster. I like the calmness and peace, and
yes.
I always feel loved because we're all being each other's cheerleaders, I guess.
Yeah, I like that. Rebecca, it's been wonderful to have you on the show.
And, thank you.
I'd love to have you on sometime again.
I would love
to.
We
can collaborate in something.
I would love
also,
to.
Also, where can people hear more about you? Like, do you have a website or
a
way to get your information?
I do. Just go to RebeccaForster.com and they can find me there. And I answer every email that comes into me. And Twitter, Facebook are all Rebecca Forster. So I was very lucky to get that name.
Yes. yeah. Excellent. And do you do any kind of book signings or do you do anything
else? You know,
or?
I don't do many book signings anymore, but mm-hmm. I always announce them when I do, but I do
okay.
a lot of conference speaking,
yes.
philanthropic speaking, that kind
mm-hmm.
of thing, because
mm-hmm.
I think it's important to go out and help people realize that, you know, there is a window somewhere for them. If I could step through my little window
yes.
and have this wonderful thing happen in my life, it's just a matter of kind of looking mm-hmm. up and seeing what's available.
Wow. I didn't know legal thriller writers were so happy.
I thought
you guys were dark and like looking at crime.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm pretty gruesome when it comes to writing.
Oh,
so
okay.
I better warn everybody.
So this is your happy side today.
This is my happy side, but boy, I can kill people like nobody's business.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That's the Gemini in you, right?
That is.
Rebecca, it's been a pleasure. Again, this is Dr. Alex Avila, Love University. We're live at the Festival of Books. It's been a wonderful day. If you have any questions for Rebecca or other parts of our show, please visit us at loveuniversity.love. Write to us at loveforyou@aol.com. That's LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U at AOL. Visit us at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So until next time, this is Dr. Alex Avila. Please put away your books, your notepads, your iPads, and read some books, and we'll see you next time.